6:02, I'll call to order the June 9th Policy Subcommittee. Meeting's being recorded by Franklin Matters. Real quick, just a roll call. Reese Hanson.
Present.
Al Charles.
Here.
Dr. Rogers.
Here.
And Assistant Superintendent Paul Arano.
Here.
And Steve Sherlock.
Here.
Good measure. Awesome. Thank you. So I know a couple of the approved policies. One actually, I think, one quick note with JRE. I'm sure you guys have seen the email that came through. I bet it'll be in the superintendent's report. Friends of Fletcher made a $20,000 donation to the state championship signage.
Fantastic.
And so I know that ball's all rolling already, but it's always fantastic. Like, this is something that, you know, came out of policy just a couple of months ago. You know, we wrote this concept into reality, and then now here we are actually with financial backing to kind of make it happen, which is terrific. Just in terms of approved policies, we have the facility rentals and emotional support dog. I think there was any additional updates needed for those. Perfect. So we have a couple items on the agenda, but first, it was something that kind of came up yesterday or late Sunday night. But so if you might be able to, Ms. Morano, if you want to.
Sure, be happy to. So DESE put forth new regulations in June 2025 regarding the use of timeout practices in Massachusetts. These regulations will become in effect on August 17th, 2026. They have provided to districts some general guidance back in February. And one piece of this is we need to update our policy, JKAA, with the new definitions of seclusion, as well as the different safeguards that need to be put into place, clarify the definitions of timeout, the requirements for the use of timeout, as well as the different, like, as I said earlier, the safeguards to put in place to reduce the use of seclusion, such as emergency intervention, parental notification, weekly and monthly reviews of the data, as well as documenting and reporting the use to DESE. So it's quite the layout. I went to our attorneys. I did receive the policy this past week, and this is the policy that they drafted for us. It's a little bit more in depth than the one that MASC had. So I just need to bring this forward for your review and approval.
First, any kind of overall general questions?
Can you highlight the kind of significant changes compared to what we have?
Sure. Basically, this is, as I said, it goes more in depth with the definition of seclusion and the use of seclusion and timeout spaces. So it goes basically, it's prohibited to use seclusion, and then if you are going to use seclusion for students, it gives you the criteria of when that would be okay, but also the documentation that has to take place prior to using seclusion, such as consent from the parent, medical documentation that it's not going to cause psychological harm or physical harm, and then what other processes and what other approaches you're going to put into place to prevent you from using it going forward, and then the updated documentation. As a result of this policy, DESE did provide some federal grant money. We did receive $50,000. With that $50,000, we're using it for education, for professional development, as well as some supplies and materials to help our teachers better understand some proactive strategies such as de-escalation and tier one approaches to prevent dysregulation and behaviors in the classroom, as well as some other tools such as fidgets and, you know, calm spaces in the classroom that the kid can just take a chill in the chill zones and whatnot. So really improve our tier one practices. So we will be doing that. We've already taken an inventory of different supplies that we need to purchase for the teachers to increase their inventory, but also we'll provide the PD and coaching next school year. So Tina and I have been working with some outside providers.
Yeah. And one thing I would just add is that Paula secured that grant, and we were one, I think, of only 78 districts.
Correct.
In the state of Massachusetts who did. So
yes, one of the many of the area districts did not receive any grant money whatsoever. we're fortunate enough that we were able to use those monies to actually get outside providers to come in and use do some coaching and some professional development.
Good. Thank you for securing that grant. Mm-hmm.
Have we recently had those exclusion rooms?
We do have timeout spaces in, let's see, almost every building except with the exception of the high school. It is used at the elementary level. And when I say seclusion, I mean, there's usually adults in the room with them. So they're not, we're not locking the doors and, you know, not keeping an eye on the student. It's just a calm space outside of the classroom in the hallways that the students might go into, which just has some, you know, bean bags and some pads that we can do to help the student regulate.
Okay, I remember on a tour seeing.
Yes, we do have comm rooms. So we just need to look at those rooms. You know, there's criteria now to make sure that they're safe, which all of our rooms are, because I do inspect them every year. But just make sure that, you know, they're safe and, you know, there's no nothing on the walls that can cause harm or anything like that. They're in good shape and whatnot.
Okay. So. I remember a friend, I mean, a while ago, but had worked in a school district that had one of those. It was effectively a padded room,
right.
A small little one. That
right.
Just the student would go, they would close the door. So that's not in frame.
No, we don't have padded rooms. And yeah, if anything, they're just regular rooms with not much in them. Mm-hmm. They're really pretty bare. And like I said, there's some bean bags, some different, you know, stuffies and de-escalation tools in there.
Okay.
So.
And then something else is on page 3. Just had a question or maybe a suggestion. Under prohibitions, there's a whole bunch of stuff. And then there's a specific line, prone restraints as defined by the state are not used in Franklin. But then underneath it, it's a number of restraints, including prone restraints, that are strictly prohibited in Franklin
yeah.
public schools. Do we need to list that twice, that prone restraints aren't used in Franklin and they're also prohibited by Franklin?
Probably not. It's
okay.
Probably the attorneys being super diligent.
Extra. Okay. Then I won't strike it, but maybe just I'll add a comment to see if the attorneys are comfortable with removing that line, just to.
Mm-hmm.
data on how often restraint is applied?
We do.
How frequently is it applied?
It depends. There are some students where it is a daily occurrence in certain situations. So we have to document it on our behavior incident reports, and then we also submit that data to DESE every year. Well, on a weekly basis, and then I have to certify it at the end of the school year. So,
have you ever had a concern with how the restraint has been applied?
No.
I think the only other last one might be in the complaint procedure. Mm-hmm. On the bottom, the complaints must be filed within 60 school days of the event. Want to change it, like, in order for the district to investigate, the complaint must be filed.
Sure.
Just so that if folks 65 days or really beyond mm-hmm. have a complaint, at least there's a record of it, but we're acknowledging the district is not going to.
Yeah. Okay, I like that.
Some guidance coming out as it relates to screen tech technology use within the next year. DPA.
I don't know what that is.
Sorry, student. So any software tool we bring in for students has to have a student data privacy agreement. So we partner with Tech Collaborative, and they work to ensure that that exists for us before we put anything in front of students. The things that we may put in front of students that don't have that SDPA, the Student Data Privacy Agreement, parents have to sign off on at the beginning of the year. So that are tools like YouTube, Google Maps is one of them, like our Google Suite. Google Maps is separate of Google Suite. Trying to think back to the acceptable use from the beginning of the year, but let's just use those two as examples. So we're even having conversations about those, to your point of student privacy, what's the intention and purpose behind that tool's usage? Do we want this to be a choice, or is this something that we don't even have as a choice? You know, so we're starting to have those conversations too as it relates to the Massachusetts Curriculum Frameworks are the guiding principles that we use to educate students at every grade level. And so how do those, when we're investing in curriculum tools, how do those support those curriculum tools or not? And being very deliberate about what we say yes to, what we put out as options.
That's great. I actually did not. So I remember we talked about SDPAs last time, so I didn't know it.
Yeah.
Didn't recognize the acronym. It's a little bit alarming that there's not an SDPA for Google products, considering.
There is, but I think, I'll double check this, but I believe Google Maps is separate from our whole Google Suite is absolutely, and so in Gemini, that's an AI tool that is in Google Suite, also abides by the Student Data Privacy Agreement. I think just its maps sit separate and away from that, but I'm going to confirm that.
That actually is a strange one.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I don't want to alarm people or folks that might be listening or you all. Our Google Suite is absolutely adheres to our student data privacy agreements.
Well, that is good. Very good. But I appreciate your diligence about it and your looking into this. I know it's a lot of effort, and I think it's certainly meaningful to me personally. I think given Carolyn's involvement and the parents who are talking to her, who have connected to me or other community members through her, it seems like it's meaningful to a lot of people in the community.
Yeah, and I think the research is there. You know, there is real reason to pay this close attention and just be intentional with the time we have with students.
That's always, I love that word as well, just the intentionality of not kind of going on autopilot with all the stuff that's coming out of us, and also not, we'll see with the AI, not putting our heads in the sand, but just kind of being intentional about everything that's happening out there. So, okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Unless any other kind of questions, comments. The next two, we got CL Administrator Report and CM School District. So these are some of the older policies that Al identified in that spreadsheet. And we can start with CL Administrator Report. And a lot of the stuff, some really might not be necessary anymore, especially we'll look into Administrative Report. There's no longer an MASC policy, or maybe there might not have ever been an MASC policy. This could have been something Franklin adopted themselves. But so just as we kind of start to tackle some of those old ones, gives us an opportunity. It might just be nothing more than, yep, we put eyes on this looks good. It might be sweeping changes. It also might be completely just removing it because it's not necessary anymore. So we'll start with CL Administrative Reports. If anyone has any questions, comments, thoughts.
So for this one, I mean, I know it's commonplace, like, do we still need this?
I read it, and it seems like that would be, like, when the school committee would, like, write a letter to the superintendent to say, formally request. Now everything's all email documented, and there's a legal requirement in an IT department that handles all these records. So I don't necessarily know how needed it is anymore.
And I think the way in which I would say the superintendent operates with his public reports through school committee meetings, I think, is very transparent. I think covers a lot of this. And I, to your point, things being in digital formats, posted online, I think there's less of a rationale for statistical information off, you know, that last piece there. So again, to Dave's point, there's no MASC policy. I don't see an immense need to keep something like this, but that's your purview.
Yeah, I certainly will entertain a motion to strike this. I will say if we do remove this, though, it's going to make it on the spreadsheet that we actually tackled less. Because now
keep it on there.
But I'll entertain a motion to remove CL administrative reports from our school committee policy. If there's a motion.
Yep. So moved.
All right, a second?
Yeah, second.
Debate, discussion. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 All right, opposed? Thank you. So now we'll move on to CM School District Annual Report. And then this one does have a corresponding MASC policy, which I think is relatively in line. The one addition that we have, a bit more local, is the inclusion of the town clerk. This report will be filed with the town clerk for the annual report. But open the floor for discussion, questions, comments.
The Commissioner of Education is the state position. Is that correct?
Yeah.
No concerns with this. I'm going to keep it as is.
And so the only thing that I had in this, typically the school committee will also have an inclusion in the annual report. I don't know if we necessarily need to draft it into policy. It's just something that, you know, Dee or others would just reach out to the chair and say, hey, we need this drafted. Here's last year's version. Clean it up. And then it gets tossed out before us at the school committee. So it's not necessarily policy. It's just something that's just something protocol that's just been done. We can include it and codify it in policy or just leave it as is.
Yeah, and you're referring to the narrative?
Yeah, it's a small little narrative, and it also will sometimes include descriptions about some of the subcommittees that are out there.
Okay.
And the different subcommittees, like what they do. So there's usually like a little paragraph that says, here's what policy does, here's what. But my understanding is, I think we've all been copying Dr. Bergen for about a decade now. with little tweaks here and there.
Yeah.
So that would be my only thought, if that's needed to be added, or if we're happy to leave it just with as is.
I mean, I'm fine with it as is. I mean, it's just as the committee chooses to do so.
Yeah.
My thought would be to update the R language to just mirror the MASC language. It's a little different, but it's a little broader. We're held to the MASC policy anyway. We may as well hear the language.
We always come side by side. We're
copying and pasting just in here so you can see it on one.
Yeah, that's like moving back.
I'm gonna paste it right below, and then I'm gonna just right left justify these because this is just
killing you. Yeah.
I wasn't gonna say anything because it seemed too picky, but
So one thing when it comes to, we're not beholden to MASC policy. What happened is they draft up a whole bunch of stuff and then they send out like their updates. And it's always a great refresher. And so it gives us the opportunity to say, hey, these are people who have also spent a lot of time on it. And rather than us reinvent the wheel, we had this right at the end of our first term. And we went and we discussed everything, and Denise Spencer had a text going with Tracy Nova, who was like, ooh, that stuff that you've been working on for the last like week and a half, like we're going to come out with our own policy that we could have just adopted and taken. So we never have to follow exactly what they do, but at the same time, if it's there, it's already been vetted, it doesn't hurt.
Yeah, and Reese, I mean, the section that I highlighted, it's the same intent as what we wrote, because the town clerk's annual report is open to the public, same audience, so it's the same outcome, mm-hmm. It's just not the same words.
It just gives the front clerk flair to it.
Works for me, though.
So we're going to keep it left, justified.
Keep it left. I'm going to actually work on this basic because I don't like that either. But I'm going to work right now.
But then otherwise, we can leave it as is, but then update to say it's now been looked at after 12 years.
After 12 years, we left justified the policy.
Yeah, there we go. It was a long time coming, but we're going to get it done.
Okay. I will just give a heads up. I need to request access to SC norms and procedures.
So,
I'm not there yet. I just was trying to provide
it. No, I appreciate it. I just sent out, I'll show you what that one looks like. This came up from you a while ago, talking about like good of the order. Mm-hmm. And so this was a norms of procedures that the chair, Jenny Spencer, at the time had kind of drafted up and put together. And Al, this was the famous hard stop at 10 o'clock mm-hmm. or whenever I'm speaking. But ultimately it has a whole bunch of stuff about how the school committee is supposed to operate. There's a lot of fluff in there, you know, we're supposed to be nice to each other, and we're supposed to follow Robert's Rules of Order, but then other times it starts talking about specifics of Robert's Rules of Order as opposed to just to kind of say this is where we're at. But it also kind of gets to good of the order. Mm-hmm. What I wanted to do was to kind of use this just as a jumping off point to slowly start to kind of rebuild some of that stuff, but maybe with a little bit less fluff and be more direct. And so I just shared with everybody, and Steve, yourself included, if you wanted to follow along. But it's titled Franklin School Committee Meeting Conduct and Debate Structure. Discussion structure. But it just looks to kind of enshrine a couple of things. The first one is just kind of specifically how during discussion and debate, how the chair will kind of go and recognize different individuals. And it's what we have right now, where it's starting over on the right, kind of works its way in, skips to chair and the vice chair, and then the next round goes over to the left, and then does the same, except a slight addition of also explicitly kind of stating what happens in for virtual members as well. And this is something, just by the way, I spoke, this document spoke with Paul during PACET and shared with him as well in advance of this. But just so that way, everybody, ourselves, but also future school committees, this is something that we all kind of adopt. Everybody right out of the gate has that understanding. Mm-hmm. Just so that sometimes it's, I want to go and, you know, is it my turn, is it not, or I want to throw this out here. So it's just this idea of, let's really try to kind of put this in writing so that way we can try to manage the meeting structures a bit more. This is something I did pull from, I think, that school committee document, but talk about time limits. Not necessarily just the whenever I'm talking, the debate stops, but a 5 minutes for the first round of questions and 2 minutes maybe for subsequent. Obviously, that could be up for debate and discussion. But I think if there is something there, it at least makes everybody else a bit more intentional with their questions and their thoughts. If they know, all right, I'm going to try to kind of limit myself to maybe 5 minutes during this first round of questions or discussion. I'm kind of just giving a quick overview of some of the stuff that we can kind of jump down. But the other one was, it just kind of talked about number two, the under specialized agenda milestones. We basically go to the order. Is exactly as it is right now, but it's not in this 20-plus document that's 3 years old. We can just kind of highlight it right out of the gate to say this is what good of the order is, here's where it begins. But also points of, actually wanted to, points of panda pride. Just an opportunity, kind of like what the town council, you know, we spoke about this, I think, at the meeting. They have their councilor comments, they have it at the beginning of the meeting. We need that, but just an opportunity for all of us seven to talk about stuff that's just happening that we're excited about. Because I know sometimes that's also what happens is people, will, myself included, will shoehorn in topic of conversation into the FHS representatives, maybe it fits better in the superintendent's report or wherever it might be. So I think if there's just everybody knows at a point in the meeting, we're going to have this opportunity for folks to kind of go and talk about events that are happening, things that were really great for them. It also might help just kind of keep the meeting flowing a little bit more, too.
Yeah. That points of pride is kind of precisely what I had in mind. Before I was on the committee, in the beginning of my time on the committee, I had conceptualized good of the order as what you're describing, kind of pride, as like that opportunity for committee members to just take a couple minutes to highlight or speak to things that are important to them, whether it's future agenda items or just like the softball game is awesome. Mm-hmm. And so that it came up for me when I wanted to recognize the theater department, and there was not like a time to do so. And I was like, I didn't want to wait till 2 weeks, and then it was 2.5 weeks ago. So I think if we have that as a regular thing, that would give the opportunity to all of us that I think this is really helpful, because we don't always have something like that. We don't always have something to say, but when we do, it's nice to have it as a good time to say.
Exactly, yeah. And I think it might make it so that way. I know I've written down some things and then I waited a bit like, oh, wait a minute, now somebody just mentioned this, so I feel like I could use it as a segue. And it's like, we don't need to be doing that. And so that way everybody kind of understands this is the point, we'll be able to kind of go broadcast what we want. But also, and it might be another discussion, kind of talk about agenda items because that is a policy, but if it's at the bottom versus at the top, it just makes it so that way everybody who actually has business with school committee can go and do it and go home, and we don't have to wait until we're all done talking before the rest of their business begins.
I think it's totally fine for that to be at the end.
The only feedback, 2 points. I think maybe it's after new business versus prior to new business. And then maybe just keeping the section I had outlined a little bit more general. I don't have the words right now, but just so that it's broader that we can cover things that are really more to the benefit of the district or,
Okay, with the points of like Panther Pride, just so that way people don't feel like they're also kind of put in this box. If this is the only thing I can say, I'm just...
Yeah, exactly.
That makes sense. Steve?
Just from experience, certainly watching other committees and this one, as well as other committees in the town, recommendation for reconsideration of the terminology. I agree in the approach, but good of the order is not readily apparent to anybody as to what it means, nor is Panther Pride. I mean, it does, but if it's committee comments, you can say committee comments focused on Panther Pride events and or other community events and cover it that way. Mm-hmm. But if this is going to be part of the policy and new people are going to come in, they're going to it doesn't clearly jump out and say, that's exactly what you're trying to do. Just make it a little bit easier yourself and future committees to just, you know, better explain, and if you keep good in the order, just better explain what it is, or, you know, modifications to whatever. I don't have the appropriate language for that one. I could go study it and come back, but committee comments, I think,
just keep
would
simple.
Be simpler at least, and then you can still reference, mm-hmm. you know, Pride of the Panther or whatever there in the description to get to that point.
I think that's great feedback. Does it make sense to add committee comments to our agendas and then scratch good of the order, that good of the order comments would go into committee comments, mm-hmm. and the Pride comments would go into
you can incorporate that way.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would say, because I mean, at that point, like, what's really
what's the difference between, you know?
Yeah.
I also wanted to, well, I'll let you finish.
No, go right ahead.
Okay. With the time limits, the language saying debate on any motion is strictly limited to 5 minutes, I feel like we don't violate that so guideline so often, but I also feel like to say it's strictly limited is kind of inflexible,
mm-hmm.
whereas maybe language that says when, like, at the chair's discretion, the chair may limit question or speaking time, but no member shall be allotted fewer than 5 minutes, and no member should be allotted fewer than another member, or something like that. So, what do you think?
I understand what you're saying, and then it gives the chair flexibility to then say if we need to expand that.
Right.
I have the discretion to do so.
Exactly. Like, I feel like in practice, it doesn't come up too often for us. Like, I know we all can talk a lot sometimes, but that maybe Dave will be the one that hits the time.
Let's stop it.
Right, but there are some nights when it's going to be really important.
Yeah.
We've got a lot. And tonight it might be an example of that. We've got a lot to get through an executive session at the end. There's a lot that we're doing, and then other nights when there's just one thing we're covering, and you know, do we need to strictly adhere to 5 minutes, or else we're in violation of our own policies?
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
From a public perspective, feedback, but speaking on behalf of the others, I would anticipate if they were here, would say something similar. Time restrictions would only be needed if the membership is repetitive in their comments. So if somebody's going to say something, somebody else is going to say something, and maybe just a very slight variation, that does not advance the conversation. The meeting just, you know, becomes tedious. But generally, in my opinion, the conversations are moving forward. And I think without codifying the time bucket, giving the chair or acting chair appropriate saying, you know, just keep your comments to the new pieces and move it forward would be a workaround. Otherwise, you're potentially at risk getting into a nice, flowing, great conversation, and it's going to take 6 minutes, and somebody's going to cut off.
Yeah.
That doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, I agree. I also think about, like, in the House where time limits, like the U.S. House of Representatives, where the time limits are more important. Just how, like, people will ask a question, the person starts to answer, and then they're getting cut off by her. I ask her because they need the time. You know, and then there's a whole lot that goes into that dynamic anyway. But that's not us, and I don't want us to ever have to be in a situation.
That's 500 people, too.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Where we're like telling one of our guests to stop answering the question we've asked because we have more questions to get to.
So, how about a quick draft? Chair may establish uniform time limits for all members during debate discussion.
That's great language.
Perfect.
Go ahead. I feel like it's still just missing something.
I agree. I'm actually just stuck.
Let's see. Because ultimately, chair is facilitating the meeting and is leading it. However, if somebody is going long and it's providing value, right, if there is a reason why we need to reduce their time, I think it should be more of a, like a vote at that point. Just be like, are we all in agreement? Yep. We have to cut it now, or do we want to give this person a little lot more time to speak, you know?
And then, so that one is within just normal Robert's rules of order, where they can just kind of go, because mm-hmm. I don't have that conversation. He's like, you know, he could just kind of go and say, all right, we're going to vote to get discussion now. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, we could just leave it with a simple link to Robert's rules of order.
Okay.
Yeah, because I don't plan on filibustering anytime soon.
You say that now.
Procedures, and conflicts. So I think what I'll do as a next step is connect with each of the building principals to say, when you have a day field trip for club at FHS, or, you know, kindergarten students going to wherever locally, you know, what are those? And I'll gather those to see how they differ from the documentation that I have. Mm-hmm. So I'll do that work.
Okay, that'd be fantastic.
And so question, is that a separate policy for the field trip slips? Or because I see the one that we have is more around field trips in general, not the form and documentation.
So I don't think the form itself would be connected to, I think the intent of this policy is to provide guidance around why we go on trips, how we do it. Mm-hmm. Who gets to participate, the safety is ensured, like those types of things. But as far as, you know, how we have like those procedures that live separate, mm-hmm. but we ensure that the procedures align with the okay. policy. But because that will allow us to tweak things too as yep. we need. Or, okay.
And then I think what might be great is when we do kind of circle back to this, then we can also kind of do a deep dive into the policy itself. Mm-hmm. And then now we can say, all right, here's the school committee policy, here's the permission slips have gone out, everything kind of go with gel. Makes sense.
Okay. I know this would be something we do for the start of the school year. I think the PCCs typically do field trips, or at least help sponsor them October or later. So I think if we can get this like sure. squared away in September, well, at least by the end of September, that'd be ideal.
And if making great headway with that, I mean, we can't always also reset. Some point in the last meeting, you were like, "Wait, when does policy meeting?" Like we were, and you know, and so you know, we could also always talk about if there's some stuff either that comes up, or we're just making great progress on having this, you know, in sometime over the summer, even if it's a virtual meeting too, to kind of keep it light.
Yep. Absolutely.
Then. So one last thing just to kind of put on the radar, include the ECAB, the Access to Buildings and Grounds. Now, I actually was looking at this because the Horseman Legacy, we did a walkthrough the campus grounds a couple of weeks ago. And one of the things that kept coming up was how many amazing, like the high school courtyard is gorgeous, and how many different spots we have on our school grounds. And what is open to the public versus what isn't for security reasons. And so I was digging around, and that's where I kind of stumbled across this one here. Yeah. And so just a conversation of the future of, you know, what is available. As we look at this policy, I know it's the buildings and grounds of the blank public schools, so we could also tighten that language up, but yeah. more so just so that way we can look at this and have an idea of, you know, what are some of the buildings that are open to the public? And also, this was Bobby DeLorco was at the walkthrough with us, and he was instrumental with the building of the high school. And one of the things he was saying is, like, you know, this is something that will be advertised to the community, that this was their space as well, to vote, to walk on the courts and stuff. And is there a way, or should we, and if so, is there a way that we can advertise that more to the rest of the community to say, hey, everybody, this is your space as well. It's not just for our high school kids. But that's just why I wanted to bring that up, just to kind of get that.
Absolutely, that and I would just name during non-school hours when students are in session, because that's kind of become a conversation as well. Just off, you know, folks using school grounds to walk their dogs. The school's in session, and you don't know, But yes, I think, and I'm sure it outlines it in here. I can't pinpoint it in the moment that it's during non-school hours. And I wonder, too, to your point, I understand the sentiment around access to building because it's a public space. So, you know, walk the track, like those types of things. But also, is there a way, or maybe it's not in this policy because we do have other policies, but folks can rent spaces in buildings. And those parts that are accessible for rent are on a website. And maybe there's an opportunity to publicize that here, but I do understand we have other policies that speak to that, so it might not be appropriate, but worth considering.
Yeah. Wonderful. All right. Any other kind of questions, comments? Then thank you. you guys. This is a fantastic meeting itself, but also the first school year under our belt for policy. So there's a lot, but there's a lot more to come. So I appreciate everyone's efforts. But with that, I will entertain a motion to adjourn. All right.
Second.
Non-debatable. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
We are now producing this in collaboration with Franklin TV and Franklin Public Radio. This podcast is my public service effort for Franklin, but we can't do it alone. We can always use your help. How can you help? If you can use the information that you find here, please tell your friends and neighbors. If you don't like something here, please let me know. Through this feedback loop, we can continue to make improvements. And I thank you for listening. For additional information, please visit franklinmatters.org. If you have questions or comments, you can reach me directly at suresteve@gmail.com. The music for the intro and exit was provided by Michael Clark and the group East of Shirley. The piece is titled Ernesto Mañana, copyright Michael Clark and Tin Type Tunes in 2008, and used with their permission. I hope you enjoy. By the way, you can also subscribe and listen to Franklin Matters Radio on your favorite podcast app. Search in podcasts for Franklin Matters.